Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of our society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, media, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are actually counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interests, to understand why they are doing so, because exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful. It's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law, because it's liberating, enriching, and empowering. And its covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, 877-300-7645. The news feed from the Washington Post reads Baghdad. Iraq has provided Washington with a list of weapons that it needs to wrest back control from anti-government and al-Qaeda-linked militants in the restive Anbar province, and plans also to request counter-terrorism training from U.S. forces soon, Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki said on Thursday. The United States is working on providing the medium and light weapons, including another shipment of Hellfire missiles, Maliki said in his interview here in the Iraqi capital. He said he submitted the wish list after a phone call with Vice President Biden on Tuesday. Another shipment of Hellfire missiles. What on earth would the Iranian-controlled government in Baghdad want with Hellfire missiles? You know, a Hellfire missile was initially designed in the 1980s by the United States to be deployed on its Apache gunships, the attack helicopters. Its principal target is armored personnel carriers and tanks. Hellfire is not actually a reference to the fires of hell, although that is the consequence of deploying the weapon. It is actually a helicopter launched fire and forget missile is the actual name. Helicopter launched fire and forget missile led to the acronym Hellfire. It became the missile's former name, the formal name. According to the U.S. government, this missile has a multi-target precision strike capability and can be launched from multiple air, sea, and ground platforms. It's a universal killing tool. The Hellfire missile is the primary 100-pound class air-to-ground precision weapon for the armed forces, of the United States and many other nations. The Hellfire can be deployed from rotary, it'd be helicopter, and fixed-winged aircraft, waterborne vessels, and land-based systems against a variety of targets. Now, mind you, the Sunni rebels in Fallujah are armed with American assault rifles. We did not give them armored personnel carriers. The Americans did not give them tanks. We did not give them any weapon that would be an appropriate target for a Hellfire missile. And yet the Iraqi government, which is controlled totally and completely by Tehran, Iran, this Shiite menace to the world and to its own people, has requested additional Hellfire missiles, and we're giving them to them. It is insane, grotesquely immoral. We're giving the Shiites laser-guided missiles that are designed to be deployed on Apache attack helicopters. Now, let's say that they actually use them against Fallujah. Are you going to feel good as an American that the Shias are murdering Sunnis using American weapons of this mass destruction capability? Then why are we on the other side of the border in Syria providing weapons, including missiles, to the Sunnis so that they can fire them at the Shia? Has America lost its way to the point that we think providing hellfire missiles to both sides in a conflict is going to somehow resolve the situation? Are we so messed up mentally that we actually think that there's a war going on against Al-Qaeda? And that by arming Shias in one place, we can thwart the advance of Al-Qaeda, and by arming Sunnis in another, we can thwart the ambitions of Iran? Because that's what we're doing. It is so mind-boggling stupid, so grotesquely immoral. It's if you are a patriotic American, supporting your military, supporting your government, you ought to have your head examined. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. It's time to come clean. It's time to recognize that this is not a country that you can be proud of anymore. It hasn't been for a very long time. It's not a peace-loving country. We are the merchants of death. We made a disaster out of Iraq, causing the Syrian civil war, enabling the Iranian nuclear program, changing the balance of power in the Middle East. Isn't it time we finally figured out and America held its government and military accountable that since everything we have done has been disastrous, counterproductive, suicidal, that we just stop? You know, there is something far worse than doing nothing. And that's consistently doing the wrong thing. Until we come to grips with the fact that Al-Qaeda is an absolutely irrelevant symptom, and that 99% of terrorism is perpetrated by Sunni Muslims, and that Shia Muslims are no better, and that there is no way to reason with them, there's no way to form treaties with them, you can't find a diplomatic solution with them, and the worst thing you can do is to arm them. And to recognize we can't fix this, and that every attempt we deploy makes a bad situation infinitely worse. I did a radio show this morning on KGAB, a Clear Channel station in the in Wyoming area. And explaining this to the audience, there was an idiot that called in and said, well, you know, if you don't support your government, you're supporting terrorism. Come on. What's wrong with us? Have we completely lost the ability to think? I understand most of the people listening to this program are listening because they know that their government is broken. They know that their military is not worthy of their support. They know that these things are counterproductive. And so maybe I'm preaching to the choir here, but the reality is that the vast preponderance of Americans don't seem to get it even still. If you like terrorism, then you ought to support your government, because we are the primary arms supplier to Islamic terrorists worldwide. We did so in Libya so they could defeat a secular dictator. We're doing so in Syria, ostensibly for the same reason. We armed both sides in Iraq. We are providing most of the arms in Pakistan. We provide most of the arms in Egypt and have embraced the Muslim Brotherhood and the military junta. We are the arms supplier of the region. We have manufactured the enemy that is killing us. America provided the first $5 billion worth of weapons wielded by Al-Qaeda. It's time we recognize that if you don't want to support Islamic terrorism, you need to distance yourself from the American government. And until we come to the realization nationally that everything that we have done relative to the Islamic world has blown up in our face, then we will continue to make one grievous mistake after another. I'm going to share with you what the Iraqis did the last time they had an opportunity, the last two times they had an opportunity, to use their weapons against the only moral nation in the midst of this hellish Islamic poison. Because this is how our Hellfire missiles will be deployed. And you just need to think about, since Yahweh loves Yisrael, how much he must hate America for providing Yisrael's stated enemies with these weapons. In the 1948, what's called the Arab-Israeli War, it was the Muslim-Israeli War, the Iraqis deployed a force which peaked at 18,000 men. In 1948, the Iraqi army deployed an additional 21,000 men and 12 brigades, and the Royal Iraqi Air Force deployed 100 planes, mostly British. Initially, the Iraqis committed around 3,000 men to the war effort, including four infantry brigades, one armored battalion, and support personnel. These forces were to operate under the Jordanian guidance. During the truce, the Iraqis increased their force to about 10,000. Ultimately, the Iraqi Expeditionary Force numbered around 18,000 men. During the Six-Day War, that was the war where Muslims in unison decided they would attack Israel and wipe the nation off the face of the earth, driving every Jew into the sea. The Iraqi Third Army Armored Division was deployed in eastern Jordan. However, the Israeli attack against the West Bank unfolded so quickly that the Iraqi force could not organize itself and reach the front before the Jordans said, "We cease fire." Repeated Israeli airstrikes also held them up, so that by the time they finally reached the Jordan River, the entire West Bank was in Israeli hands. During the course of the Jordanian campaign, a dozen Iraqis were killed and 30 were wounded. But that is how they're going to deploy the weapons that have been given to them and are now deployed by the Iranians. Time magazine, in its current issue, revealed what the Iraqi government is intending to do with its American weapons. It, by the way, it has a smorgasbord of weapons. It's not just American weapons that are being deployed now in Iraq. It's a smorgasbord of weapons from around the world. And it reads, the Iraqi government pledged on Sunday to retake the city, Fallujah, in the coming days in a counter-offensive to be led by local tribes instead of the Iraqi military. No, that's an absolute, complete, and utter lie. Now, they may attempt, and they are attempting, to retake the region. But they're not going to use local tribes. There is no local tribe, no Sunni tribe in Fallujah or Anwar province that's going to go and side against their neighbors, their comrades, and join the Shiites in pummeling and destroying and murdering and raping their own community. Ain't going to happen. That's why the Awakening program was so utterly stupid. Now, the Shia government is saying that because the Sunni see the army trained at a cost of $25 billion by U.S. taxpayers. Trained. That's not the equipment cost. That's the training cost. We trained the Shiites on how to use $25 billion worth of U.S. weapons. As Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's means to eliminate the Sunni rivals and to consolidate power. Why do we want him to consolidate power? Why would that be good? Hey, think of that. The only thing that is a thorn in the Iranian side for having total and complete control of a land crescent from Tehran to Jerusalem, to march their military into Israel. Is the animosity that a minority of Iraqis have towards them. Those who are opposed to Shiite Iran and Shia's advance in the region, as the whole world should be, happen to be the Sunnis that we're now opposing, that we're providing hellfire missiles to kill. This article reads, would it have turned out differently if U.S. forces were still in Iraq? The last GIs left in December 18th of 2011 after Iraq refused to grant legal immunity to any remaining U.S. troops. This reads perhaps, but at a greater loss of U.S. blood and treasure. But Obama decided, after more than 8 years of war there, the U.S. public was ready to toss in the towel. Granted, he could have twisted additional Iraqi arms to try to get such legal protections, but the voters who had put him into office 3 years earlier weren't interested. So that's the editorial comments on all of this. I'm here to tell you, if America had stayed in Iraq not 8 years, but 80 years, the situation would be identical. No difference whatsoever. It's like the Vietnam War. We kept on saying, oh, if we just stay and fight, that, you know, then those who died here won't have died in vain. No, it's just more died. The issue of not granting legal immunity is because of twofold. One is the behavior of American troops in Iraq and Afghanistan has been horrible. We have murdered many, many Iraqi and Afghani civilians in cold blood. We've been ruthless. You know, there's video of us in Apache attack helicopters killing, you know, a dozen civilians, including young children, with a Gatling gun and giggling about it. They don't like us. And for good reason. And they don't trust us. And for good reason. You know, nearly a million Iraqis have died since our invasion. That doesn't tend to endear a country to your troops. The same issue, of course, is going on in Afghanistan. They don't want to grant immunity either. And the second reason is that this thing that we don't seem to grasp, which is that the ethic or morals, the value system, the judicial system, which is based on those values, in an Islamic world, is the antithesis of what it is in a Judeo-Christian culture. They're literally the antithesis of one another. And so they don't want the Judeo-Christian ethos deployed in their country. They want the Islamic morality. Let's look at the quote from the journalist that was saying that perhaps it would have turned out differently if American forces were still in Iraq. But, of course, they couldn't be in Iraq because Iraq would not give legal immunity to U.S. troops, which means that anything that a U.S. soldier did in Iraq that was in violation of Sharia law, they would be held accountable. For example, being a Christian would have been subject to death. Handing out a Bible would be subject to death. Celebrating a Christian holiday would subject them to death. Even being an agnostic or an atheist would have put them in harm's way with Sharia. And so, you know, in Sharia law, you can be a rapist, you can be a murderer. They don't have any problem with that. Those things are encouraged in Islam. But the things that are discouraged in American jurisprudence are encouraged there and vice versa. So there was no way to subject American troops to Islamic law. And so we had no choice. We had to leave. But think about the blood and treasure we would have continued to spill for nothing. For nothing. You know, to continue to provide weapons to the Iraqi army and then train them to use them, knowing that they are now in the hands of the Iranians and going to be deployed against Israel, why is that a good thing? And the only thing that the Americans did when we were there is that we distracted the animosity of Sunnis and Shias against one another because they had a more favored target, us. So while we were there and they could both attack and kill us and win jihadist points with Allah, they weren't killing each other. And now that we're gone and all they have to kill to earn jihadist points is one another, this is what you get. So how would that be any different if we stayed 8 years or 80 years? Now, this comment is really pertinent. The U.S. public was ready to toss in the towel. 60%, 65% of Americans came to realize that there was no winning in Iraq. 60, 70% of Americans know there's no winning in Afghanistan. They just want us to leave. That's what we ultimately did in Vietnam. We just threw in the towel. Ultimately, the will to continue this myth of if we continue to stay, then those who have died previously won't have died in vain doesn't sell anymore. It doesn't sell anymore. And that's the problem. America recognized that everything we were being told about Iraq was a lie, that the invasion should not have occurred, that we invaded Iraq based on a lie, and that we were making a bad situation worse by staying there, and that there was no chance whatsoever of resolving that conflict, of putting the country that we broke back together. And so we left. We threw in the towel. Broke the country and said, here, you can have it. Now, could Obama have twisted Iraqi arms to get legal protections? Perhaps, because they're dependent upon U.S. weapons. And all you would have to do is say, no more weapons, no more money. They're dependent on both. Or you give us what we want. But how is that a solution? You know, people who find killing aid workers fun, which occurred throughout Iraq, and then poking their burning bodies with sticks while dragging them through the streets and taunting them while hanging them from bridges, you know, find immunity against U.S. soldiers' atrocities unacceptable. Now, how are you going to reason with such people? Todd Bowers was a Marine who served in Fallujah during some of the toughest fighting. Who lost Fallujah? That was the question asked, and he said, we all did. He said on Sunday, I guess we all just decided it was easier to forget Fallujah and get on with life. Vets, politicians, and the general public. No. The truth is, there was nothing wrong with Fallujah before we invaded. And once we invaded, it became a living hellhole. I guess that's perfect for the Hellfire missiles that are going to be deployed against its people now. The people there are vile. They were vile. They are vile. They demonstrated how hideous they are when they dragged the bodies that they desecrated of the American aid workers through the streets, shouting at them, taunting them. And while they were vile, they weren't harming one another. They weren't harming anyone. And yet we invaded, and look what happened. It's not that we went in there and were trying to resolve the issues of Fallujah. We made a mess of Fallujah. We didn't forget Fallujah. We just ought not have ever engaged in the place. But, of course, all this sounds like Vietnam. If we only remained, you know, another 20 or 30 years instead of 10, somehow the outcome would have been different. So let's sacrifice more lives, spend more money in the vain hope that those who had previously played this same game didn't also die in vain. When is that broken record going to stop playing in people's minds? As the third battle for Fallujah looms, a passage from a 2011 Pentagon probe into the U.S. effort to build a new sewer system for the city could stand in miniature as the lessons of the entire war. Now, this is the Pentagon's plan to build a new sewer system for the city. This is their own verbiage. Little planning went into the project, and there was minimal understanding of the on-site conditions. No skilled workforce was available, and no clear idea of how much the new system would cost. The investigation concluded so many adverse conditions faced this project from the outset. Thus, it's hard to understand why it was initiated and continued. Now, if the sewer is the entire country of Iran, it's hard to understand why it was initiated and continued relative to our invasion. You see, there was no thought that went into the invasion. There was no understanding of the site of the invasion and the Islamic influence. As I told people before we invaded, if Saddam Hussein does in fact have the ability to deploy a massive array of chemical and biological weapons, then sending American troops on the ground into Iraq is murder. There is nothing in Iraq that is worth exposing tens of thousands of American boys and girls to the onslaught of chemical and biological weapons if he in fact had them. That would have been grotesquely immoral if he had them. And if he did not have them, there was no reason to invade. You could not make a sane argument for the invasion. Well, the people were not just unreceptive. Those who went in to help, that we went in to help, were actually our enemy. They didn't want our help. They wanted to kill us. They still do. There was no clear idea about how to prevail, how long it would take, how much it would cost, how many would die. Replacing a secular dictator with an Islamic regime beholden to Iran was so adverse to anyone's best interests, it's hard to understand why the invasion was initiated or continued. Yes, everything you need to know about Iraq was revealed in the Pentagon's review of the sewer system, also known as Islam. Reuters reports that the Iraqi army deployed tanks and artillery around Fallujah. They did so on Tuesday, 2 days ago. Security officials said as local leaders in the besieged cities urged those who were fighting against the Shiite government to leave to avert an impending military assault. Imagine this in America. You live in Dallas. How about Waco, Texas? You live in Waco. And Janet Reno decides that she's going to surround your community, not just the Branch Davidians. She's going to surround your community with tanks and artillery. She did it to the Branch Davidians because it was assumed that they had illegal shotguns with barrels that were too short. And so it was deemed, they were deemed worthy of assault. I have no love for the Branch Davidians. I despise all religions in particular religious cults. But we ought to have freedom of choice. And we ought not deploy our government, our weapons this way. But imagine living in Waco and a city that's about the same size. And you have the U.S. government decides that they don't like the fact that there's some Wacoans with guns that they shouldn't have. That forget about the Second Amendment, the rights to keep and bear arms. We're going to totally disregard that constitution. The U.S. government thinks there's some folks in Waco that have got some sawed-off shotguns, and therefore they surround it with attack helicopters, with tanks and artillery, and say, you either surrender and you capitulate to government tyranny, or we're going to bombard you. Oh, and by the way, we're going to bombard you using weapons that have been given to us by your avowed enemy. We are going to impose our religion on you. You're either going to accept our religion and accept our control over you, or we're going to wipe you off the face of the earth using those weapons. That's what's happening in Fallujah. Now, I have no affinity for the Muslims, the Sunni Muslims in Fallujah. I'm not going to look at them as victims. I genuinely do not care how many of them are killed. There's no hope for them. I have witnessed what they have done when they were given the opportunity, and they are savages. But I'm going to tell you that the Shia wielding American weapons are no less savage. They are Hezbollah. They are Allah's party. They are equally ruthless. And while there is no love lost for the Sunnis on one side, we ought not be arming and equipping the murderers on the other side. To this story about the fall of Fallujah. The Reuters story, which of course is a follow-up to the Sunday reporting by the other periodicals. You know, on Sunday, Malaki said that we aren't going to use our army to quell the rebellion in Fallujah. We're going to use the local tribesmen. And then here on Tuesday, we find that the army deployed its tanks and artillery all around Fallujah. And then requested from America more Hellfire missiles to use against Fallujah. Meaning that he lied. He lied. And it was obvious he lied. Now, security officials and tribal leaders have said that Prime Minister Minister Nouri al-Maliki agreed to hold off an offensive to give people in Fallujah time to resolve these issues. But there is no way to resolve the issues. Fallujah is a Sunni town. Its population is protesting against the draconian treatment that they're receiving by the Shiite government that America imposed. They have no representation. They have no rights. They're treated just like a Copt Christian, for example, is treated in Egypt. And so they're going to rebel against it. You can't resolve that problem. The people of Fallujah are militants, as are those in the army threatening to kill them. That is the problem of fighting a religion. There are no good sides here. We ought not be taking sides here. We ought not care what happens here. Fighters, some of them foreign, from the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, which is really ISIS. And in the case of Iraq, when American troops were in Iraq, there was a significant influence of foreign jihadists, particularly from Libya, because you get extra bonus points with Allah when you die killing Christians and Jews. And since there were both Christians and Jews in America's military, there were foreign jihadists that came to fight this great jihad in Iraq. But now that America has left Iraq, there is no great jihad in Iraq. And so the fighters in Iraq are almost exclusively Iraqis. Now, they're mostly from the Awakening program that are opposing the Shiite government. And Syria now, because it is viewed as the great jihad against Shia Islam, it's hard to say if it's a majority or if it's just a very high percentage minority, but there are tens of thousands of foreign jihadists. Saudi Arabia and Libya have provided the most, although Egypt is a significant contributor, as is Pakistan, to that jihad there. But this has nothing to do with foreigners. This has all to do with the two dominant strains of Islam, Shia and Sunni Islam. And we learned yesterday, it's not ISIL, ISIL. It's ISIS. It's the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And Sham, for Syria, represents Greater Syria. It's the Syria of the Sunni domination of the world. When the headquarters of Islam moved from the outskirts of Baghdad under Shia control to Sunni domination. The Sunnis did not want to have their headquarters in an area that had a significant percentage of Shias. So they moved the headquarters from Iraq, Iran, to Damascus, Syria. And it's out of Damascus, Syria, that Sunni Muslims, who represent 80% of to 85% of Muslims today, controlled much of the world. And so it is that greater Syria that is embodied in the name of ISIS, the Islamic State and Iraq, which what they would consider Iraq and Iran, the and Mesopotamia, Assyria, if you will, and Syria representing the greater Syria of the golden era, if you will, of Islam. This says an Al-Qaeda affiliate. Now, we beat that horse to death. Also active across the border in Syria. That's why their name is ISIS. You would not even have to have said that if you had translated their name accurately, dear Reuters journalist. They overran police stations in Fallujah and another city in Iraq's western Anbar province last week. They did more than overrun police stations. They are in control of the Anbar province, western Iraq, along the border with Syria. Now, as you know, Iraq, Al-Qaeda is not a franchise. Al-Qaeda did not have an affiliate agreement. In fact, Al-Qaeda does not and did not have incorporation documents nor a constitution. Al-Qaeda is nothing but an expression of Islam as the name ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and greater Syria, affirms. We'll be back with Shattering Myths and continue this story after the news and commercial break.